Now on the line I have Saoirse Brady from the Children's Health Alliance. Good morning, Saoirse. How are you?
Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Am I pronouncing that right? I'm always worried that I pronounce people's names incorrectly.
No, that's correct. Thanks.
Yeah. No, I really am bad at it. Really, really, really bad. I always claim that it's my dyslexia that does this.
You're saying it right. Don't worry.
Saoirse, I noted we have 7,000 young people awaiting mental health services in the country. What's going on?
Well, Michael, those are 7,000 children waiting for community health appointments, you know, so these aren't people waiting for specialist services. And I suppose we launched, in the Children's Rights Alliance launched its report card 2018 last week. And within that, what we do is we look at what government is committed to do for children. We look at its own promises that it said it will do for children. And obviously they made promises around mental health and improving mental health for children and young people. So one of the things they did was they did put in place a national Youth Mental Health Task Force, which looked at certain areas of mental health for children and young people. So, for example, that task force has recommended that there should be an advocacy service for children and young people. It's also recommended that children should be able to consent to mental health treatment from the age of 16. And various things like that. But I suppose what it didn't necessarily deal with were the issues that are arising in the services for children and young people. So one of the big things is around recruitment. Recruitment of staff for mental health services, both community mental health services, so that's in primary care centres, so that's in your local community centre, or in the specialist centres, you know, and we have a number of those around the country. There is a difficulty in first of all, recruiting staff and then retaining them and keeping them there. It's not an easy job, we accept that. And we do welcome that the HSE, following the publication of our report last week, they did come out and say actually they were finalising recruitment, certainly in the community mental health sphere, that they were going to be bringing more people on board, and they were going to prioritise areas where there were longer waiting lists, and one of those happened to be North Dublin. So that was very interesting and very welcome as well. So we recognise that the HSE is actually trying to address this problem, but when you can't get the staff that you need who are qualified to do the work and you can't get them to stay in the job, then that's very difficult, you know.
Well, one can accept in a way that, you know, we're trying, we've put out requests trying to take on people. But how long is this going on? When was the Vision for Change recommendations? When were they released?
The Vision for Change that's being reviewed at the moment because it's been in place for quite a long time. I think it's about 10 years now. Or just over 10 years actually. And it's been reviewed as well. And what we would welcome is they are looking at it from a human rights perspective. I think there's been a lot of learning in the area of mental health and people realising what their rights should be in the area. You know, we have come a long way from locking people up or, you know, providing treatment against their will. And it is a much different system, and that's very welcome. But a Vision for Change, we are meant to have a review of it. We're meant to have a review of the legislation as well. And what we would hope to see is that the law would actually provide a specific section for children, that it would deal with mental health for children in particular. What often happens at the moment, because of the shortage of beds and staff in some units, the children may end up being admitted to an adult ward. And, you know, if a child is experiencing mental health difficulties, for them to have to then go into an age-inappropriate place, you know, surrounded by adults rather than people their own age, that only adds to their anxiety and adds to their difficulties. So while we accept that often children may be moved out of an adult ward as soon as a place becomes available, the fact that they're first admitted there, we feel isn't right. And we would hope that the that next year that the numbers being admitted to adult wards would go down again.
I'm going to apologise in advance because I get a little bit emotional and a bit annoyed when it comes to children and adolescents and our government neglecting their responsibilities. I find it difficult to understand how very well paid elected representatives can justify what has been going on for the last number of years. When you consider in the Vision for Change, their recommendation, and as you say, it's about 10 years old, we've still only got just over, nationally, we've just over 50% of the staffing that they that was in that recommendation. I think that's appalling. I don't know how anybody can stand over that.
It's a real difficulty, and you know, and what we have seen is that I think there is, in fairness, I think there is goodwill there on the part of the government to actually do something about this. What we have seen is that they put in, that they have actually ring-fenced money, but what's happening sometimes is that it's being handed back. So really, you know, we need to look at what the issues are to address that, you know, and it is about attracting people back from maybe overseas who would like to work in the Irish Health Service, and that has been an issue over the last number of years, and there have been recruitment drives to try and get people to come back. So I really think that that is something that really needs to be looked at in more detail, because if we aren't getting those people to come back, and you know, the staffing levels, as you say, are only at half of what they was promised and what they should be, then we need to find a different way. We need to find a way to make the Irish health system, and in particular the Irish mental health system, a place that people actually want to work. You know, people have a vocation. They want to work in this area. So how do we better support that? How do we ensure that we get the qualified staff who want to actually, you know, work there? The other side of that is, as well, it's a very difficult job and there's a lot of burnout. So, you know, it is also about protecting the staff that are there and making sure that, you know, there's not a huge turnover. So these are all issues, I think, that need to be looked at in more detail and need to be addressed. And I do think that that the government is cognizant of these and is trying to work to do something to improve the situation. But I suppose, you know, from the outside, we're looking at it and I'm sure we all know people who have suffered mental health difficulties. So we would like to know that they will be seen immediately, that, you know, that a child won't be left in an emergency room being sick, you know, after a suicide attempt, because they're, you know, there's no specialist place for them to go. There's no 24-hour place for them to go when this happens. So, you know, there are moves towards having 24/7 supports for children and young people, which is very welcome. But, you know, this year in report card, we did give mental health a D+, which was a slight increase from last year's grade of a D-. And that was really because we do recognise that some moves are being made to try and improve the situation.
You know, when I look at it, it's our young people, and young people are at their most formative years, and to leave them waiting, I think it's affecting the whole of their lives. It's affecting their future lives. It's one thing if you're a fully grown adult, and you have to wait a while. I'm not saying that's right, but it's one thing that. But when it happens in your formative years, I think it's far more devastating. But if we look,
what we do know is
go ahead.
I was just going to say, Michael, what we do know is that if you intervene early, then the outcomes are much better. You know, when a child is left on a waiting list for over a year, or anyone is left on a waiting list over a year, but as you say, particularly children and young people in their formative years, the situation actually deteriorates and becomes worse, and then they may require even more treatment, or they may even require hospitalisation for something that, if they had gotten an appointment in a timely manner in a primary care setting, for example, initially, with a referral on to a specialist service if they needed it, if that happened as soon as they went to their doctor, then, you know, their outcomes would be better. It would actually ensure that they felt better in a shorter space of time, or that they got the help that they needed in that space of time and were supported, and that things wouldn't deteriorate for them in the same kind of way. And in the longer run, let's face it, it would also save money. You know, we wouldn't have to put as much money into crisis services, into, you know, the specialist services necessarily, because primary care services would be able to cope with some of the issues that are arising that may not be as serious if they intervene early. Sorry for interrupting you there.
No, you're as they say, you're talking my language there. Early interventions. It doesn't matter whether it's in mental health services, if it's in cancer care, if you name it, across the board, the earlier you intervene, the better the outcomes, and the cheaper it is to the exchequer, we'll call it, in the end.
Yeah.
It's a no-brainer, but the I know I worked in businesses throughout my life, and the biggest problem most businesses had was when accountants took over the running of the business. And that's nothing against accountants. There's the need for accountants. I'm not saying take all accountants out and shoot them. I don't say that at all. But accountants should not be leading businesses like health or retail or that, because there is a need for investment early. And it saves you money at the long run. Accountants don't see that. All accountants see are the figures down on paper for this year or next year. They don't look 10 years and 20 and 30 years down the road when the costs are just going to go astronomic because you didn't put a few bob in early. And it's something that I've spoken to a number of people in healthcare services over the last number of months, from what you may call eye care services to primary care services, and they're all talking about this: put the investment in early.
Yeah.
Now, as of my age, I've lost my train of thought. That's what I was going to say. But leaving that aside, I'm going to go back to the staffing levels. And I was just looking at something the HSC had sent out to Deputy Louise O'Reilly. And I noticed the Fingal area, the North Dublin area, which would be under CH09, has actually got the probably the best outcomes in terms of the number of staffing levels,
okay.
But it's still down at least a third on what it should be. And then you see other areas, a number of other areas are down on the 50% mark, and it's frightening.
Yeah, I think really this is something that they're looking to try and deal with substantively this year. Really, it requires investment. That's what it requires. It requires knowing the needs of the local community, ensuring that the service that's put in place can cope with demand in a particular area. And I was heartened to hear Anne O'Connor of the HSC on Morning Ireland last week and said that they were actually going to look at the areas, the localities where people would most need the staff to go, where the waiting lists were longer, where there was more demand. And I think that's a sensible approach, to prioritise those longer waiting lists. But then, of course, what you don't want to happen is that by prioritising them, that another waiting list elsewhere will grow because the staff hasn't been given there. So while we welcome the sensible approach to prioritise, we also feel that, really it needs to be monitored quite closely to ensure that the resources are going into the areas that need it most.
If we accept the bona fides of the HSE and the Department of Health, that they're trying to get more staff and they're willing to invest, what might be the other issues that are holding back people taking on these roles?
Well, I think, as I mentioned, it's really the support for staff that are already in there. I think we need to make sure that they are supported, that they're compensated properly, but also given the emotional supports or the staffing supports that they may require. You know, they probably need more support than, you know, somebody working in an office might, for example. They're coming into contact with people who, you know, may be in crisis situations themselves, and they need to know that they have the support of colleagues around them and management to ensure that they can do their job fully. So I think that is something that will also, you know, form part of the recruitment process by the HSE. But obviously, I'm not a spokesperson for the HSE, so I'm not sure what other steps they're taking within the service to ensure that people in there will stay, will remain, and will be supported in doing their job. We do have a specialist mental health service in Lindara in Cherry Orchard for children and young people, for adolescents. And actually last year in 2017, half of the beds had to close in it for a time because there wasn't sufficient staffing levels. And we're glad to see now that's up and running again, because when they close the specialist adolescent beds, it means that children are being placed in adult wards. And that, as I said before, that's unacceptable.
Something that gets me on this is that the HSE, and you know, I have a lot of time for the HSE, so I may be sounding as if I'm knocking them, but in a way, I have a lot of respect, and it's a difficult job they have to do, and it's so broad the care they have to take. It's everything, but I do find the HSE is a major bureaucracy, and sometimes that bureaucracy gets in the way of actually treating the patient. Could that be some of the reasons for the lack of staffing levels? Is that people just don't want to get involved in the ton of bureaucracy that's involved in working in the HSE?
Well, I'm not sure. You know, I've never worked there, so you know, I know that there have been criticisms of the HSE, and that it can be quite management heavy, and that is something that comes up routinely. But it's not something that we would necessarily have looked at in report card, so I'm not sure that I'd be best placed to comment on it. You know, I think I'd be speculating if I said yes, that might be an issue, but, you know, I just wouldn't have the evidence to back that up. So I'm probably not the best person to say yes or no to your question there, Michael.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, and it's probably a bugbear that maybe it's for another day. It's that I worked for an organization that found it very difficult dealing with the HSE and trying to provide the individual care that was needed for patients and clients, because the HSE were saying, because it's bureaucracy, you have to do this, 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 and this. But that was not always what was best for the patient or the client. But the HSE had it down on their sheet that everybody has to go through this. But not every, the right thing for everybody. So we'll leave that for another day. But we're quickly running out of time. You know, you can see I'm very opinionated. I'm sorry about that.
That's why you are where you are, Mike.
locked away in a room on my own.
No, talking to the public. You know, it's great to be able to talk about these issues. You know, I think they're very important, and they are things that impact on people's everyday lives. So I think it's good to have these discussions.
Yes, and I agree with you there. And that if I can do one thing in this job is to just highlight issues and bring them forward for the attention of people, and maybe get people thinking about it, we're doing our job.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Saoirse,
and if people want to have a look at our report card, it is on our website, childrensrights.ie. It's on the front page, so they can see what we've written about in terms of mental health, but also in other areas of health and education. We've also touched on child and family homelessness and rights in early childhood. So people might want to have a look at it and have a read. You know, overall, the government did better than it did last year. It got a C minus. It was up from a D plus. But I suppose our assessment was that there, you know, while it has done better, there are still children left wanting in Ireland today.
Saoirse, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thanks for coming on this morning.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
All the best.
Take care now.
Slán leat.
Okay, bye.
Bye.